on, everybody? Welcome to Pillow Talk with Paul Gano. Today, my guest is podcaster, comedian, and father, Syed Raza.
Thanks for the introduction, man. That's what I wanted my eulogy.
After I asked you like 20 questions before this, so if I fucked it up, that would have been back. Thanks for being here, dude.
Thank you for being here.
Ironically, got pulled over for speeding on your way here.
Hey, man.
Can we talk about that? Shit, I should have asked.
No, I got off easy. I told him I was going to a comedy show, and the guy goes, "Who's your favorite comedian?"
Yeah.
And then I was just like, all right. Then I like racially profiled him. I was like, what would he like? And I was like, Bill Burr. And he goes, I like Bill Burr. And he came back and just gave me a warning.
So, all right.
Reverse racial profiling.
That's what's up. It works though, right? Like, I'm guessing he was like a white guy, probably lacking some hair maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah, dude.
He seemed like he would be angry about things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's lots to be angry about, but... I mean, for me, the police would be one of the things I'm angry about. So it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, like, if you're either one of them and you have a pension, you're like, you know what? I could see it their way. But if you're not a police officer, it's hard to love the police all the time.
It is, man. And especially when, like, certain things happen and it's like, okay, dude, I don't know about you, but I'm 37. Any job I've ever had in my life, if I do something wrong... And I'm, like, suspended, you know? There's never been a situation where it's with pay. And, like, I don't deal with, like, generally I've been, like, a chef or, like, a forklift driver. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not injuring people.
Right.
You know, in some cases, killing people. Yeah. And, like, these guys are getting not, like...
With pay is a...
Suspension with pay is just mind-blowing when it involves the death of a human being.
Yeah. When I was a kid, when I hear, like, they're suspended with pay pending an investigation, I was like, they're on vacation.
Essentially, right? Yeah.
You've got some paid time off. I grew up in Houston, and in Houston, when you have the cops in your neighborhood, it's, like, a very stressful situation. Like, it's inner-city Houston, and it's, you close your blinders, you lock your doors, you don't look out the window, and it's pretty fun. You get, like, have drive-bys and stuff in inner city Houston pretty regularly, so.
For real?
Yeah, I went to the same high school as Lizzo and Beyonce.
Interesting facts. Yeah.
Interesting facts, and Rashad Lewis, the basketball player.
All right, yeah.
But, yeah, cops were, like, orcas, or, like, killer whales in the neighborhood, where you're just like... Shit, it's a killer whale, you know, like, so it was fun times.
So how'd you end up in Houston? You have, like, a long journey, like, so when were you living in Houston? Mm-hmm. Let's kind of just, like, maybe just tell me all the places you have lived. Yeah, I'm interested, because I am just very plain. I've lived in different parts of Canada, but, dude, I went to Buffalo once. As, like, a child. And I barely remember it. You know, as a kid, it wasn't there. Like, I wasn't there for very long. So...
Well, if you want to, like, ruin traveling for yourself, then go to Buffalo first and be like, there's nothing in this world.
Dude. Yeah.
I was born in, actually, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Because my dad was working at the airport there. And then what he did was bring us back to Pakistan. That's where we're Pakistani. Mm-hmm. But if you're born in Saudi Arabia, you don't get, like, a citizenship or permanent anything. Like, you're just... So we ended back to Pakistan, and he went to the hospital with some money and came back with a birth certificate saying I was born in Karachi. Mm-hmm. So I was in Karachi from the ages of, like, 2 till 9. And then we moved to Houston, Texas. We had some family there a little bit and just started, like... starting life from scratch, working at all sorts of just, like, my parents worked 3 jobs. Me and my sister worked at the flea market from the ages of 15, selling perfume. I don't speak Spanish very well, but I know all the numbers because I worked at a Mexican flea market.
Okay.
And that was a fun childhood. Like, most of your friends are Mexican or black and proper inner city. Like, you know, there's guns and police and drive-bys and stuff. And, yeah, very colorful. Like, in hindsight, very colorful. Mm-hmm. I last week went to... I typed in my high school in YouTube, Elsick High School, and it auto-corrected to Elsick High School Fights. There's so many fights for this high school. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, 9/11 happened. And just politically, things got tough. We were also like not permanent residents yet. Okay. So we had to move up here to... We literally drove from Houston to Canada. Mm-hmm. So we went through like Louisiana, Mississippi, Kentucky, like all the shitty, you know, places nobody goes to. And then Detroit, and drove into Windsor. Claimed like refugees for a while. And then got all that, took like 5-6 years under the Harper government, which is like not the right, it's the tough government to get your refugee case approved. And about 5 or 6 years ago, got a permanent residency and then citizenship.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, pretty, honestly, a lot of good perspective. I don't get stressed out about normal things the way a person would. Because mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know, you've seen a lot. You've been shot at, you've been, you know, got a deportation notice, which is, that's as stressful of a thing when people are like, we're going to deport you back to Pakistan. You're like, oh no, like that's, you know, that's as scary as of a sentence you can get. But yeah.
So when you left Houston, like, was this in, like, were you able to bring your stuff?
Yeah, we got a Dodge Caravan.
Yeah.
And we loaded it up with as much of our stuff. And then we got a 16-wheeler that we put like our, you can share like sections of it. So we put our dining table and our couches in there. You can't bring everything. So like we had to like sell our home and most of our belongings in like 2 to 3 months and then move up to Canada. It was pretty, you go from like not thinking about moving at all. You're like, I'm going to live here. This is where I live.
Yeah.
To like being in another country 4 months later. And it's jarring. It's actually like, no matter what age you were, like I was like around 18, 19, but it is something, it's a quite an experience. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily, I'm glad I went through it. I wouldn't wish that upon somebody. Because like you leave all of your friends, you leave everything you're comfortable with, including your bed and all of that. And my sister, she was married. She's still married in Austin, Texas. Like, she's down there, and then, like, you know, you leave your sister, and you take your brother and your mom and dad, and you come up to Canada, and you start, you know, from scratch.
Have you ever been able to, because I imagine it's been a bit now.
Yeah.
Have you ever been able to, like, reconnect with anybody from down there?
So interesting. So this past February, last year, so I was able to go down for the first time since coming. So it's, like, 8 years going back down there, and I was able to meet with my best friend. Nice. She's, like, married, has 2 kids, and we like met up for, and I was like, this is my son. She's like, these are my 2 kids.
So I'm cool,
like,
man.
Yeah, it was actually fantastic. We took a picture, and Holly, she's fantastic. Actually, was just messaging back and forth with her yesterday. So it was, and then took my kid and my wife to our old home in the ghetto, to which my wife was like, we're not getting out, are we? I'm like, this is I grew up here.
Yeah.
But, like, I took her to my old middle school. It had a big sign, like, no guns, no knives. It's, like, everywhere. She's like, they're really worried about guns and knives. I'm like, yeah,
there's a reason to be.
Yeah. And then I took her to my high school, old high school. And then I went to the front desk. I was like, hey, I want to just look around. I was a student here. She's like, do you really want to look around? And I was like, you know what? Not really. Like, not really. Oddly, her asking that to me made me change my mind about, like, no, I had some really horrible memories here. I don't really want that to revisit.
Yeah.
So we took a picture outside Elsick High School. But yeah, pretty... Sometimes you don't realize what it, like, attachment you have with places until you go back to them and be like, oh, this... You seen Forrest Gump?
Yeah.
Remember that part where, like, he takes Jenny when she's grown up back to the house they used to live in? She's throwing rocks at this house. She's like... Because she was, like, either molested or is treated badly as a kid there.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of, like, I had that feeling. Parts of it, I was like, oh, it's, like, so nostalgic and happy that I'm here with my kid. Like, the tennis courts and the places. And then the other parts, I was like, oh, I hated this part of my life. So it was kind of interesting to visit it as a grown-ass man with no, like, attachment. Like, nothing hurts anymore. But it was just like, oh, this book was... There's a bad chapter over here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can totally relate, dude.
Yeah.
When me and my lady, my lady's like a scientist. And I don't know, like maybe like when we first started dating, it has relevancy. I ended up taking her to the science center because she had never been, you know? And I used to live by the... So like I grew up in like foster homes and stuff like that a lot. I moved around a lot, not necessarily, you know, in situation like a super similar situation to you, but like I did move around. Like I don't like moving around now. How do you feel about it?
I don't love it. No. Yeah. I like to stay put.
And there was a part of my life where like my good family ended up moving to BC because I have a lot of like just batshit crazy family in Ontario, and my mother is part of that, and so like I eventually, my Nana became like my legal guardian, and she moved me to BC. It was like this whole thing, and while we were living out there, she was getting old, man, and so I went to go actually, like, she saw that my cousin Greg was just about to get married. His, like, future wife had a daughter, and they had, like, this big, giant property. I swear I'm going to get back around to the Science Center. No. And they had this big property, and she's like, you should go, like, live with your cousin. Like, we'll see each other every day and blah, blah, blah. But, like, she lived in a smaller place, and she just wanted the best for me, essentially. And I lived there with him for probably about 2 years, and then he started to abuse me. And then I ended up staying with my Nana, and, like, up until that point, like, I had, like, just been, like, a long history of, like, abuse. Like, I was taken from my mom when I was, like, 6 months old, which led... That was, like, the first time I was in children's aid.
And how old, like, are you now? Like, where did you, not right now. I know how old you are now. Yeah, but, yeah. Like, when you moved back in with your Nana.
Okay, so at that age, I was, I want to say, maybe, like, 10, 11. I was in... I remember moving at the very end of grade 5, and I had been there for about 3 years. So, still like,
really young.
You could probably do the math. It's probably, like, 10 or 11, yeah. Something like that, I imagine. And so, at this point, after, like, I went through all the stuff with my cousin, and I'm back with my Nana, and she doesn't really know what to do, and, like, I can see that, and I was like, you know, I kind of want to go live with my mom. Like, you know, I want to kind of maybe explore that. And she was very against it. But so I ended up, after some months, going back to live with my mom, and things didn't go well.
And that's, and here you went, you
came, yeah, in there. Toronto. I came back to Toronto literally at about Coxwell and O'Connor. I don't know if you know that, that area, but that's where she lived, and it's like very close to the Science Center. And so just one day, her boyfriend that she was dating, who is, like, the dad to, like, my two sisters. I have a brother and two sisters, all younger. Like, he hit my mom, like, in front of me. And I'm in middle school at this point. Like, I'm a little older, and I've already started, like, working. Like, I'm fairly independent. My mom's not in a good situation. It was a horrible idea for me to move back there in hindsight, but I try not to regret things because I'm here now, and I'm, like, super happy where I'm at. Anyways, I go out, smash the windshield to his car, dude, and she comes out, yells at me. It's like, I remember the one thing that sticks out in my mind to this day is, you know, he's a bigger man than you'll ever. She's like, why'd you do that? And I was like, he hit you, blah, blah, blah. And we got into this argument, and then it ended with her being like, he's a bigger man than you'll ever be. Dude, packed up my shit, ran away. Like I said, I was working. I was doing, like, door-to-door sales, and I was just getting, like, just a little bit of money, but it was enough. And because I was working, I knew some people that were older. And so this is the history that I have with this place at Coxwell and O'Connor where my mom lived. I lived there for like all my middle school years, 6, 7, 8, and then left. And we go to the Science Center. Like, we're like 6 months deep, you know? And I'm like, oh, like, we should walk over. Like, you kind of go through the Don Valley a little bit, and on the other side is where I used to live. You know, it's like a 20-minute walk. Let's do it. And we get there, and my whole thing was like pizza. I was like, I want to get there. There's a sick pizza place. Wasn't there. But as we're like walking around my neighborhood, I'm like, yeah, she lived on top of a bar. It was a bar. And so like our backyard was like this alleyway, and it's just like so messed up, bro. And I'm like, I'm feeling exactly how you were describing Houston, where I'm like, you know what, like, all these memories aren't great. Like, I did have some good ones sprinkled in, but at least half of them are horrible, you know? And it's sometimes also, it's just better in your mind, I think.
So interesting, because I was thinking about that once I came back. Is like, should I have gone to those places? Because I have this weird heavy I had a heavy feeling for weeks after coming back from Houston. But in hindsight, I'm like, it's good. It's good to revisit it. Even though it didn't feel good at the moment. And even looking back at it, it still doesn't. Just crackheads and stuff. And running from people and their dogs. But like that happened to me.
Yeah.
So like, if I can't look back at my own memory and my own childhood and at least recognize that's where I'm from, then like, who else is gonna... It's a part of me.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And that's, you know, like, that's important. Just a part of growing up is just understanding where you're from and digest it. And then, you know, have empathy for other people that are in those situations as well. Because, like, yeah, it was weird.
How did you reconnect with your friend down there? Just, like, Facebook or something?
Yeah, Facebook is great. Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you can messenger somebody you haven't messaged in a long time. And back then, Facebook was bigger, you know, than it is now. I know it.
Yeah, it's definitely on the decline for sure.
But it was so good to see her. Also, like, I think that's what made everything okay. Was I got to meet her and a couple of other people that were doing well. And I felt like my childhood was doing well in a way. Like, because I'm doing well, these people are doing well. I know this whole area is dilapidated. It's just as shitty as it ever was, if not shittier.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, these people came out of this and, you know, they're lovely.
Yeah.
And that gave me hope for that area. Like, these people are going to come out of this and they could be lovely as me and my friends are. And that was a really good. And it's, you know what, honestly, I didn't expect it. It's just a mixed feelings, but it was good in a way. It's good. I'm glad we're talking about it in a way.
Yeah, I found some people also from like my childhood through Facebook, and most notably, like, my best friend from, like I said, moved around a lot. So I was at Shepherd and Warden for about 2 years. I went to a Catholic school there, and my best friend for like, I want to say like maybe grade 1 and grade 2 was this guy Jonathan Penn. And one day I just got like a message on Facebook, and this is like back, like when I first joined Facebook, I was like probably first year, and I have a love-hate relationship with social media, but this is kind of like the good side of social media. Yeah. And he was just like, hey man, me from Our Lady or whatever. And like, I was like, John, okay. And so, side note, this guy specifically was like, he was a bigger Filipino dude.
Right.
And we wanted to go to Taco Bell one day. And it was, okay, so it was like this, the black iron fences with like the very sharp tops. Like, things weren't like super baby proofed like in the 90s like that. And anyways, I go through the fence. We're trying to get to Taco Bell without having to go 5 minutes around the fence.
Right. Is he too big to get into
the fence? He's a big dude. And he can't fit in.
Oh my God. Right?
And so his thing is he's just going to hop the fence. And he gets to the top of the fence, and this is fuck. He gets to the top, and then he just kind of like falls the rest of the way.
Oh my
God. He's struggling at the top, and then falls over, and starts bawling.
Oh man!
And I'm like, dude, like, what happened? Are you all right? And he like shows me like the crotch of his pants, and like there's a big rip. And I was like, it's all right, man. Like, your mom, blah blah blah. And then, dude, he pulls in deeper and pulls out his nuts, and one of his nuts is like showing, dude. He had ripped his sack open,
dude.
Yeah, man, it was wild.
Jonathan Pan.
And like, yeah, dude. So I like ran and like just buzzed up my Nana because I was staying with her at the time.
And you had half a nut with you. Nana, let me in.
No, well, it wasn't out. Like, no, he ended up getting taken to a hospital and like having surgery. And I remember visiting him in the hospital, and he had like just the biggest thing of like ice just sitting on his crotch the whole time. And so when he messaged me, I was like, Jonathan Penn? Like crotch Jonathan? And he's like, crotch Jonathan. And I was like, dude. That's, and like, so you know, we don't hang out a lot, but he's seen me perform. So like, I don't know, it's cool, man.
It was really cool
to like be like, Jonathan, you're good, right? Like, you can have kids, man. Like, you know,
I bet you that guy doesn't fuck with fences anymore.
I bet you he doesn't. And like, he's lost a little weight too, you know. Hey, maybe, you know, it's all a product of that. But hey,
that's a childhood,
dude.
That's a legit challenge. When you have to jump fences and, you know, get your scrotum caught in a fence every now and then.
There's Taco Bell, like five tacos for like $3 not or something it. Like that. Yeah, at the end of the day it. Right.
Yeah,
damn, that's, man, crazy. Yeah, dude.
Awesome, man. This is a good start to this conversation.
Ah.
I also like that we've only had like one or two very comedian conversations prior to this, and we could sit down and like,
yeah,
let me
yeah.
tell you about Houston. Let me tell you about this guy's nutsack.
I felt like it was going to be good, man.
No, it's good.
So, like, how long mm-hmm. have you been doing comedy, and what got you into comedy?
Okay, so I've been doing comedy for, I would say, like, very aggressively or whatever for about 7 years, and 2 years before that, it's like casually one open mic, two open mics a month, and what got me into it was... The depression mm-hmm. of I tore my, so I used to do all these sports, right? Semi-professional tennis, jiu-jitsu. I was doing tournaments. I would cut down to 125 pounds, and I'm 5'8".
Yeah,
but I was, if you're 125 at my size, you're an anomaly. You're like a slender man because everybody else is tiny and normal. And I was doing all these athletic stuff, and I tore my ACL. A dude just put it on backwards for me. He's like, there you go. Here's your leg.
For real, eh?
Yeah, I was...
Was this like a tournament that
it
happened?
Yeah, it was... There's this tournament. The guy was Bulgarian. And I think, you know, in our country, we're getting points. I think it meant a lot more to him. Like, I think you get a taxi if you, like, in his home country, if you win. So he's, like, traveled here for this tournament. Mm-hmm. And he had me in something that I normally don't tap to, and I didn't feel like I had to. I felt like I could work out of this situation. And he did enough that it was just like a slight pop, but that pop was my ACL. And the ACL, unlike your MCL, does not heal itself over time. So I partially tore my ACL, didn't realize it, and the next time, like a week later, I went to jump playing basketball. I heard a snap that I thought everybody in the building heard, but I only heard it myself. And it was my ACL just completely giving up. And so I had torn my ACL, just gotten married, living in Toronto, away from my family. They're all in Mississauga. I'm sad because I didn't realize that athletic stuff is my entire creative outlet. Mm-hmm. When somebody asked you, are you creative? I would have said no. But, like, playing basketball, doing jiu-jitsu, those are my creative outlets, and you lost those, and your friends are over here. So I started just riding this bicycle for rehab, and I was riding my bike up the Ossington, and I could just hear laughter coming out of this tiny bar. And I went in, and there's this back room, and it's just packed. It's, like, 11 or 12 o'clock. It's packed. And it's just an open mic, and I came back twice, 2 to 3 times, just to watch, mm-hmm. and it's... horrible. Like, this is not the best. You know, it's open mics.
Yeah. Less people, like, you know, putting themselves out there.
100%.
Yeah.
So, I watched 3-4 times, and then I wrote my name down, and then they called my name, and I just stayed quiet because I didn't want to go, and then I came back the week after, and I did go, and then I enjoyed it. And then slowly but surely, you go to another open mic, you make a buddy, you go to another open mic, and then you start like, oh, I actually like certain parts of this. I love, and I've always loved stand-up comedy, and yeah, that's how I kind of got into it. And Comedy Brawl was like a big tournament. It's mm-hmm. a little bit smaller now, but it's still out there. I signed up for Comedy Brawl, did all the rounds, got to the finals. I won, which was it was fun.
Yeah,
it's more than fun. It was hard. And that's what I really enjoyed about it, because, like, you got to, like, do a ton of comedy all this. You're doing comedy, like, 4 times a week, 5 times a week, just to get ready for this thing. And I'm working a full-time job in software sales in the morning and doing this at night, and it was just so difficult that it felt like jiu-jitsu. It felt like tennis in the Texas sun. It just felt hard. Like, it's 104 degrees, you're playing tennis is how you do it. And I fell in love with that grind part of stand-up. And then things started falling in place. And now it's been like, you know, 8 whatever years or so.
That's a nice story.
How'd you get into it?
Oh, man. I was engaged.
Okay.
I told this a couple times, so I'll try to sum it up
fairly quickly. You didn't tell me.
But I was engaged. The person I was engaged to had a daughter. We were together for like 5-6 years. And things didn't work out. And it had been a long time where I felt like I was just living for them, mm-hmm. you know? And it kind of, like, when we broke up, it felt like I was, in a way, like, breaking up with two people because I had such a bond with her child. And I was just like, I really need to just do something for myself, you know, and I had already gone down the path of music. Like, I was in quite a few bands, and I just got to a point where I was like, I can't really afford to do music. Like, I know, like, it's not like I'm super broke, but like, there's a lot of money that goes into like everything, and it's just, it, and I was like, I need something else, you know? And stand-up was always something, like, me and my buddy Miles for like years were trying to like get each other to do open mics and stuff like that. And honestly, I signed up for Second City, and yeah, man, I did a couple levels at Second City, and then I just, I didn't really feel like it was necessary to do the third, because I had made a lot of connections and stuff already from doing open mics, and that was it. So, and I feel like a lot of like the stories too, when I ask comedians, like, they're generally somewhere around that. Like, there's something bad led them to comedy, and I really love that you just like, you know, were out trying to recover, and you found this thing that fully like filled the void. Do you know what I mean? That's awesome.
It also looked like a closet of misfit. Nobody seemed like they kind of, you know, it's a mess.
Yeah, totally.
Open mic is a mess, and it's like a homeless dude. He's with, and he, you know, a homeless dude will go up, do his 3 minutes, and get off, and they'll respect the light, and then you'll have like, it's funny because I took a picture of the open mic sheet. I didn't sign up that first. Like, it has Olivia Stadler. It has like a few people I know and that are still doing it and stuff. So I was like, I like that. That's the great thing about the city of Toronto, man. Like, you're not going to get that everywhere.
So I don't want to move too far from
Toronto. No, I know what you mean. Yeah, we had a kid and we had to move this way as well to Mississauga. But no, it's still, we got to make a scene in Mississauga under a shawarma shop or something. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, dude. I'm trying. When this comes out, the second Knee Slapper City will have happened. Also, super excited to have you on March 15th. He's going to be headlining one show. I'm doing a double feature that night for the first time. 100%. Don't know honestly, dude, it's a Friday night too. Yep. I have two shows. I'm really excited. Both lineups are pretty stacked. So, I want to bring stuff to Mississauga, and I know that the guy who puts together the shows at Rec Room's owned by Cineplex, right?
Okay.
And they just opened that Cineplex Junction at Aaron Mills, and he really wants to get some comedy like happening over there.
Ooh, I haven't even seen that yet.
The first show was kind of, it went well, but I thought like could have brought a few more, like 60 something.
Okay.
I don't know. I have good hopes. He has good hopes, and so we moved from Thursday. In March, it's going to be Friday, and hopefully the next thing would be like, hey, do you want like another show at Junction? So we'll see how it goes, dude.
We'll try to bring some people out, man.
But
fun times.
Comedy Brawl.
Yep.
And I always feel like I miss things, like I miss deadlines. And I really need to like kind of like make like a schedule or something for like, you know, Winnipeg Comedy Fest, just all like the festivals and like the competitions that are like big.
Right.
I got into Comedy Brawl 1 year, and they're like, you are gonna hear from us, blah blah blah, and then COVID happened, dude, and so they didn't do it that year.
Yep.
I don't even think they did it for the second year either.
No, they didn't. You're right.
Yeah.
I won it the right before COVID happened. I won. And it was like, great, do you want to open for this lady who writes for Saturday Night Live? I'm like, yes. You want to open for this guy? And then everything shut down for like, it was very interesting.
Killed some momentum, eh?
It's one way to look at it. I did look at it that way, but I, you know, also like, I was like, I got to win the last Comedy Brawl in a way. I mean, now it's back. You know, I think, who won? Jeevon Gill won. I think
Kobe he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Great guy. So like, it's back now, but I was like, I got to win it while there was no pandemic, in front of 500 people and stuff. It was
nice, man.
Yeah, it was good. It's good character building. You don't want to suck in front of, you know, 500 people. So you do a lot of show, and made me feel like a comic. I was doing like 6 shows a week leading up to every single, the Comedy Brawl is over like 4 or 5 months. And every month you're going up against like Michael Moses is in this one, Jacob Balshan, Ali Pierce, whatever. Like, they're freaking, it's great.
Yeah.
I would recommend it to anybody. Fun times.
When's the next one? Next one's got to be coming up soon.
I think it's in June.
I gotta look into it now.
June is when you start signing. They start it, and then I think in November is when it ends.
Yeah, I definitely want to.
Empire comedy.
Ah, oh, dude. So, like, do you watch, like, jiu-jitsu? Is that something, like, you're into?
Yeah, I used to watch. I used to watch StarCraft and jiu-jitsu while eating food. Those were my two. I just watch Koreans play StarCraft.
Yeah.
And just watch jiu-jitsu tournaments from Abu Dhabi. I only watch no gi. I watch a lot of gi, but like no gi was a lot more fun. It makes sense. Like people aren't wearing a ton of robes and stuff. So
yeah, and I feel like with the gi, it's always they use it. It's used, and I feel like you can, like, it's it's legally accepted. No.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. No gi just seemed like faster and something you could relate to. It just looked like two guys, you know, fighting without punches.
So when you watch like UFC, or if you watch UFC, do you generally like cheer for the jiu-jitsu guys?
I just love MMA. Yeah, okay. I've been lucky. So one of my coaches was Mark Bocek. He was in the UFC for a while. And then Misha Serkunov was one of our coaches. And the place I trained was Extreme Couture. So you had Wagner Fabiano, who's a jiu-jitsu guy. Mm. You had Mark Hominick as a striking coach. He fought Jose Aldo. You had Chris Hordecki come down sometimes to teach a striking class. And, like, you know, this is so much fun. But I like to root for the I just want to see a good fight. I don't, I don't have, like, a stylistic preference anymore.
All right. Because I did Muay Thai for a bit.
Oh, man.
And, so like, me and my buddy would, like, talk about that kind of stuff when we were, like, there, you know? And a lot of, like, the guy who ran it, like, he was very big on, like, he didn't like any of that shit. He didn't like anything other than Muay Thai.
That's so funny.
And like, on some level, like, I can respect that, you know? I can respect those people that just, like, focus on one thing and just are the best at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can also appreciate, like, someone who's like, I want to be, like, good. Maybe not at that level that the one person is on the one thing, but they're overall, they're better at. They try to, like, take a bit of everything.
Yeah. My coach was like that, too. Gracie's used to just go into, like, all these other gyms and start challenging people. Like, people, like,
well, that was, yeah, that's interesting. The Gracies kind of developed, like, their own.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very cool way to, like, increase the publicity of your sport. It's just like, why don't we fight?
Honestly, I'm fairly certain that's exactly how the UFC was formed.
Yeah.
Was just like when Gracie came out with his style, and it was like this whole, because he would do that, or like the family would do that, that there was like, well, like, what is better? We got to create something where we can, like, put these guys. And, like, the original UFC is wild. And
that's,
I think,
the best. That's a Pokemon tournament.
Oh, my God, man.
It's like, here's a sumo wrestler, and here's a guy with one boxing glove.
Yeah, and it doesn't go the way you think. Like, you would, I mean, just looking at it, I feel like one would assume that the sumo wrestler would just, like, just smother the other guy.
Just literally smother in his boots.
Just hug him.
Yeah, just hug you. I was very disappointed. I never got to see, like, a bear hug in the UFC. I thought that was a real move. You could bear hug, right? Like, Zangief, you know? Like, just, but no.
Damn you, Hulk Hogan.
I liked it when Brock Lesnar came in. I was like, this is fun, but that didn't happen for too long.
I liked it because, I'm a referee for pro wrestling. I love wrestling. I've been into wrestling since, like, I was watching Barney, you know? Can't actually wrestle myself. I had, like, a serious, like, I fractured my back when I was young. Oof. And so, like, it just seems off the cards. But, like, got into reffing, like, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, when Brock went and, like, became the I believe beat Couture for when he won the championship. And, like, he's arguably one of the best fighters of all time, Randy Couture. And I just thought it legitimized wrestling. Like, okay, look, we know what it is. We know you have to be equal parts actor and equal parts athlete. We get that. But, like, it really, like, legitimized what wrestling was, you know?
It did, but also legitimized being 265 pounds.
He's just so massive, dude. And then he got busted for the stunt. Like, he ended up
getting busted.
Of course
he did. That would have been weird if he wasn't on steroids.
You know what happened? I feel like at one point, you know what I mean, though? Yeah. It's like, It's like people that live in Toronto and don't have an OnlyFans. You know, like, how? but yeah, like, there was a time in the UFC where they, like, kind of switched the testings and they made it more accurate and we're just testing.
I know, they ruined it. Vitor, they shut down all these guys. All these guys were just 38 doing cartwheels off the fence, and then they got, like, legitimate testing, and then, all like, a bunch of these dudes just faded, unfortunately.
Yeah, man.
It was, I don't know. On one hand, obviously, I don't want anybody to get hurt, which is weird, because I watch the sport where the sport, it might as well be called hurt people, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was fun to see, like, these guys just be younger for a bit longer, whether it was Couture or Vitor, or a bunch of these guys had, like, testosterone replacement therapy happening and stuff, and it was fun.
Apparently, someone was telling me about this, but I haven't actually looked into it, mm-hmm. but apparently there's, like, a fighting league where that's, like, all that stuff's like that, because, okay, my friend, she's a bodybuilder, and like bodybuilding, there's, like a section where you can't, it's like clean, natural, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's another section where you can use things. Like I don't know like the limitations, but I'm pretty sure one is completely clean and one is like have at her, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she was telling me that there's like a fight league like that, and I really wish I fucking knew what it was called now.
They should do that with every sport.
You'd watch that though?
Oh, thanks, yeah.
I'd watch anything. I'd watch any, man, that would make certain sports like way more interesting.
Can you imagine if they're like, hey, LeBron's retired from the NBA now, he's going to the ex-NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
He's flying, jumping off the friggin' logo.
Space Jam in real life, man.
And then like once a year they get to have an all-star game or something.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. If like you have to be over a certain age and then they like you have to go to the other league and everybody's a friggin' wombat, you know.
My issue is not necessarily with the use, like, I mean, you make your own choices and how you want to live your life. You're not hurting anybody. I'm all for that. And if everyone agrees, like, you know, this is what we're going to do, then I think it should be fine. Yeah. My issue is that, like, you have fighters that fight these guys that are completely natural, you know, and then they're going against Brock Lesnar. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's completely unfair.
I would have that in jiu-jitsu where I'd roll with somebody and they're not like I'm rolling this person. Either they are like a freak, like some sort of, you know, just built different, but their muscles are like when you touch them, everything is chiseled in a way where I'm like, this person's on something right now. There's no way a human body sustains this level of hardness when you're, I'm a professional grabber of people in jiu-jitsu. That's
Yeah.
So this is not a human body. You shouldn't feel this way. And these guys would have pimples on their back and shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was just like, ah. At my level, though, I was fortunate. That's why I cut down so low, because you're not doing steroids and you're 125 pounds. So it was, but then again, they think I'm cheating, because they're like, this guy's so tall. This is bullshit. tall.
That's hilarious. You get it? Like, I'm glad now in wrestling, like, smaller dudes are more accepted, and the roids is not as common mm-hmm. as it was, like, in the, I mean, earlier on in wrestling. Yeah.
You do anything?
But once, what?
Like, steroids or anything?
Oh, no, I've never. No? Never, dude. I've never. I'm a scrawny kind of dude. Me too. I'm, like, 155, 160, somewhere.
Oh, where'd you fight? And, about 4 or 5 months ago, I was taking this stuff called Osterine. It's a selective androgen modular receptor. It's for people who have, like, bone density issues or tendon issues. Mm-hmm. You can prescribe it to an older person. But I got some, and I was, like, taking small amounts to, like, fix an injury. Like, it also, like, puts on muscle. Like, not a lot. Like, in 3 months, 5 pounds, which is very modest. But, like, as somebody who's worked out their whole life, I was like, oh no, this thing is putting on muscle in a different way that, you know, compared to, I'm just like, you can get it on, like, very interesting.
So they don't market as it as that kind of thing?
It's a precursor to a steroid. Mm. So it's not actually even illegal. And also, it's prescribed to, like, mainly older men and women who have bone density issues. So it's very, So I went and saw a doctor, did my blood work, then tried this for 4 months. I didn't want to do it anymore just because I don't know. I don't need it the injury healed up. But, very interesting. Those things work, is what I'll say.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. We should all be able to do that, by the way. Why is it just Brock Lesnar and LeBron James? Why can't just be like, why can't you be the most jacked chef and comedian? You know? Why not?
There's some pretty jacked chefs. That's true. Do you want to get into top five pro fighters, dude?
Yeah, let's do it. It'd
be,
man,
a good time to bust into that.
I think we're there. Okay. Is it okay if I tell mine and you say yours?
100%.
So, absolutely. Just because of, I think for me, number one would have to be George St. Pierre from a very sentimental, like, I've been rooting for this guy since I was a kid, and I think he was a kid, because he felt like a kid. He's like, I am so happy. Like, he was so innocent, right? Yeah. He's so innocent. Yeah. And he was, like, worth rooting for, because he was, like, losing. He lost to Matt Hughes, you know, BJ Penn, and then he came back, and, like, what a trajectory. Always nervous, sweaty, watching this guy. And I'm not going to say the most exciting fighter, but as far as I'm concerned, I enjoyed every
single
fight.
When you know, and like, dude, I only did Muay Thai for maybe like 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I took Taekwondo back in grade 3 for like 3 weeks, dude. And you've done like stuff for way longer, but even just like, even if I took like a couple months, just knowing those, it makes you appreciate people like George. Like, yeah, you don't always need to be the most like, there's a difference, mm-hmm, between entertaining and just like technically the best. Like, yeah. We'll I'll get into some
stuff. Number, is that...
Well, yeah, you can do yours, but okay. George St. Pierre is my number one as well. Yeah.
My number two is Khabib. And that's because I think I have to. I love Khabib. I've watched every one of his fights. I even watched a bunch of sambo matches in Russia. Watched him fight a bear when he was a kid.
Yeah.
Great story. Great champion. Disciplined. It's what I feel like embodies like a dude, like a good hardworking man is what Khabib is and was. And then, you know, went out on top, sadly, when his father passed away, which I understand. Your dad's been cornering your whole life. He passes away. Probably doesn't feel right to fight, you know?
Yeah.
And went out on top, beat the shit out of Conor McGregor. What a fun. Then jumped into the crowd, started stomping on his, you know, corner and stuff. I loved it. That was wild. That was wild. Also, who doesn't want to stomp Dylan Danis's face? That's, you know, it's, and those, I loved when he was beating, I think it was Michael Johnson. He's like, I deserve the belt. You have to get, and he's punching, and Snoop Dogg's doing the commentary later.
Khabib, Snoop Dogg on commentary, hilarious.
Dude, it's the best. It's the best. So yeah, Khabib's a solid number two.
Definitely.
I loved Anderson Silva, just because he was a freaking superhero.
Yeah.
I know he had some fights where he didn't knock people out, but the ones where he knocked people out were so fun. So fun. Where,
and coming back from an injury, like such a severe injury that he had.
What an injury.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever your foot makes a Nike logo or whatever, it's, I felt bad for the guy, but it is what it is. I also enjoyed a Cyborg fight, just because of the sheer, I feel like some of these are genres, and that's heavy metal. Like,
okay.
I feel like Cyborg Santos, she actually just fought yesterday, had an 81-second knockout in boxing. And that lady has one way to do it, and she's going to kill you. And I friggin', a lot of respect.
Yeah.
And it's highly entertaining. It takes me back to Mike Tyson. And Mike Tyson, I'm going to include in this list, even though I know he's not an MMA fighter.
Oh, yeah.
But, I was too young to get to watch Mike in his hay, but I've sat down and watched every Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali fight, and Mike was just like a throwback to when like two armies would meet, but they're like, all right, send in your best fighter, and then Mike Tyson would be like, I'll kill your babies. And, that's a crazy time, man. Crazy
dude,
time.
We have so many in common. Okay. Different. St. Pierre, nice. You said everything. He's my number one. Mike Tyson's my number two. I would say,
amazing,
like, you know, done some questionable personal things in his life.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring it up.
But separate that, like, his personal shit from just, like, his fighting skill. Like, he's got to be on there. And then I'm going Khabib.
Yeah.
He's on there. I mean, went out on top. Like, he You created a legacy. I think a lot of people are going to be, like, you know, following in his footsteps for a very long time. McGregor, for also, I want to say, also done some questionable things.
Very questionable things.
But as a wrestling fan, I really think, and I've gotten this argument with, like, most notably my buddy Kevin Muse. He's been on here before. We argued about it then. But, like, I think overall, like, he's been a good thing for the sport. Mm. I think that, and in it, it's interesting because now UFC and WWE are together. But as a wrestling fan, like, I always, like, wrestling's, they're telling stories, man. Like, that's the big takeaway, other than, like, oh, these people are really punching versus these people aren't. Mm-hmm. The real takeaway is, like, they're telling stories. These, like, the UFC is essentially just two guys fucking getting in a ring and being like, I'm tougher than you, I'm tougher than you, bah, 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 until one's, you know, not the toughest. And I like how Conor McGregor had a way of making it that more than just two guys getting in a cage. Like, some of his shit, I don't agree with a lot of the things. Like, the one thing that I can really think of is I saw him punch some old dude at a bar once. I saw that. Like, just wild. Just, he's done some questionable things that I don't support. But, like, I think he's been a good thing for the UFC overall.
I think he's brought
I don't even know if he's like, he might be done. He's supposed to be fighting this year, no?
I think he's, yeah. I mean, he is going to be out of the testing pool or something. They're not going to test. They're not going to make sure if he's on steroids.
And wait, so he's going to be able to fight without being tested?
So, yeah, basically they asked, like, you have to be in the testing pool for 8 months before you can fight. And I think they're going to reduce that down to, like, 4 months or something.
Interesting. Because he looks, since he had, like, his injury, like, dude, he's gotten real shredded.
Yeah.
Like, he looks like he's on some stuff. And then Amanda Nunes.
Amanda Nunes. I like that.
Yeah.
But why Amanda Nunes?
I just think that, I mean, she's entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
She's technically sound.
Mm-hmm. She beats Cyborg.
She's a decent person, you know? Sure, I like that. I think she quickly filled Ronda Rousey's shoes, and I think she's, like, I don't know. The leading woman in the UFC right now.
Yeah. I mean, also,
Cyborg's a beast, but
not as technical.
Yeah.
It's that's, I mean, the thing is, I know Mike Tyson might get lumped in with somebody like a Cyborg, but Mike Tyson's actually very technical for what he did. But yeah, Cyborg I watched for the sheer,
so,
like,
quick, dude.
Yeah,
so
just like
quick,
a lion and a sheep. It's always like Cyborg's gonna come at you. And
I don't, get me wrong, I love Justin Gaethje. I love watching him fight because you know what you're getting. Same with Forrest Griffin. I really enjoyed watching him fight back, but for different reasons.
Yep. There's a lot of those. I mean, that's why you watch fights, is like, who has, some people, they may never win a belt, but they have that dog in them. That's the reason they're not playing the same ladder that everybody's trying to climb. Mm-hmm. And that's why you kind of love them. You're like, Justin Gaethje. There's a lot of those guys. I mean, Max Holloway, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad they made that secondary belt, the BFF belt, not best friend's belt, but you know, that badass belt.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Nate Diaz.
Man. So what are your thoughts, before we go on to, what are your thoughts on, like, people like Jake Paul for boxing? Like, what do you think about him?
I mean, good for him, right? I guess it's, the way he got into that was he first, You gotta have a great Instagram following and whatnot. I think he's growing. I enjoy it. I'm not saying I pay for the fights, but I watch his fights.
Yeah, same.
And I think they're highly entertaining. I don't know if it's any of the stuff we've been talking about, but
yeah. But, like, it's kind of, I can't not respect it. I personally, so they've both gone, you know, they started that as their YouTuber thing, and Logan Paul's doing wrestling now. Mm. And I think, like, he's great at it. He shines there. He knows what he's doing. He cares about the other wrestlers not getting hurt, you know, where he'll put himself in the way of preventing injuries. It's like, he's got a good head on his shoulders. Right. And just as far as, like, rookies, like, I don't know if there's ever been anybody better than, like, Logan Paul out of his first year. Mm. And, like, Jake Paul, I don't think is necessarily there with the boxing, like, as good a boxer as his brother is a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, I think he's bringing, he's not, And I don't want to put him, compare him to Conor McGregor, but I'm gonna. I still think Conor's significantly better. But, like, he's doing the same kind of thing, and he's putting eyes on boxing again, and, like, people are talking about it. And he's earned my respect. It's hard for me to be like, oh, he's a boxer, but, like, you watch him, and, like, he's getting better. He is getting better.
It's true.
And that's all you can really, I mean...
The amount of courage it takes to just get in the ring over and over with, these people can hurt you. Tyron Woodley can hurt you.
Like,
he can erase years off your life. So, like, for that reason, you gotta respect him. Like,
I wish I could talk crap and then 6 months down the road I'm fighting Floyd Mayweather. You know, like, on some level, I respect that, you know?
It was funny at the first one, he was just, like, knocking out Nate Robinson kind of stuff. Like, just, you know, weird. Why are you even fighting this guy? But now it's just, like, he's fighting MMA and that kind of stuff. It's just like, all right. Also, that's where MMA is right now. It is, because of guys like Conor McGregor, it is a bit of a circus show where, like, boxing and MMA is like, hey, we're going to have some circus fights. Where, like, back in the day, that was only in Pride, you know?
Yeah. But I wonder if I've been hearing rumors of Jake Paul and Nate Diaz doing an MMA fight. So that would be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be good for him, like Jake Paul, but I'd watch it.
Yeah, why not?
If he ends up doing that, good for him. That's even extra. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. You're kind of getting there with the boxing. Thing is, like, every MMA fighter he's fought to has never been, like, a super big striker, do you know?
I know exactly what you mean.
But whatever. But you could argue that with, like, lots of fighters, though. Floyd Mayweather, you could say he's really pick and chose his fights at the right time. Let's do comedians.
Sure, that's a fun one.
All right.
Do you mind doing yours first?
I can do mine first.
Awesome.
Number one is Joseph Rogan.
Whoa.
That's my guy. Okay. Yeah. And, this is, like, pre-podcast. I literally have his first thing on DVD when he first got out of Fear Factor and, like, has, like, 15 minutes of material about,
It's
just called Joe Rogan Live.
Okay. What's the material about? Do you remember by any chance?
I
listened to Shiny Happy Jihad. I've seen all of it.
Yeah.
And he had some... I loved his early stuff. It was... Also, like, he didn't have all... It didn't need to be polished. It was free. I felt like a guy who smoked a lot of pot, was into a lot of conspiracies, and also, like, Kennison, and was, like, just trying to get his point across. Very funny.
I'm trying to think of, like, the... I just... I don't know why. It's not even a punchline. I just remember him, like, the end of it and being... And now I'm all of a sudden, I'm standing in front of him eating... In front of a woman eating... You know, fucking pig dicks. And I'm like, you can do it. And, like, he very much had a very Kinnison thing to him in the beginning. For sure. Definitely. I see that. Yeah.
That was his favorite comedian, apparently.
Makes sense. Right? Okay, so Chappelle is my number two.
Amazing.
Him and Rogan are really, like, really close.
Yeah.
I just put Rogan because I've been listening to him longer. And then I'm going Mark Forward.
I don't know who that is.
Mark Forward is, have you seen, he's like a Canadian guy.
Really?
Yeah, he's from Oakville. He writes for Letterkenny. He's on Letterkenny.
Okay.
He was on Mr. D. He also wrote for Mr. D. He had like a brief, like, one season competition show where he was like the only judge and other comedians would go and, like, perform for him. But yeah, just great.
Really?
Look him up. Canadian gem. Yeah, definitely. He has a special on Crave. I think it's called Mark Forward Wins All the Awards. Okay. I believe that's what it's called.
Okay.
And there's another one somewhere else. I don't know. I have them all downloaded on my computer. And then I'm going George Carlin.
Amazing.
Just the body of work
is
amazing. And he was the conductor. I really would say, like, he's, like, my introduction to stand-up comedy, you know? And he's, like, you know, just flipping channels, and you catch him when you're super young just, like, swearing, and you're like, wait, this is the conductor from Thomas the Tank Engine.
That's so funny.
Wild stuff. Yeah, so number four is George Carlin, then Bill Burr is my number five.
Okay, you can't really mess with that list. I mean, other than Mark Forward, who I don't know, but everything else is, it makes... You can even do it in reverse order, and nobody would fault you. You know? My number one is Mitch Hedberg.
Oh, I love him.
Mitch Hedberg was the first comedy album I downloaded from Napster.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was like, what's 60 megabytes? Because everything was either a song or a movie that's going to take you weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it said stand-up comedy, and I downloaded this album, and me and my buddy Qasim would just listen to Strategic Grill Location over and over and over and over again. So, like, even when I do comedy now, I'm like, I'm trying to be smarter, but, like, I love how just pointless but hilarious. It's not about anything. He's not trying to make a, like, there's no position he's taking
anymore. Yeah, you know yeah, I mean? Yeah, yeah.
I loved it. Everything about Mitch Hedberg, I only found out he passed away, like, 4 years after he had passed away. I'm like, no, Mitch passed away.
Way before his time, too, man. Just, like, a man of very few words.
Yeah.
And didn't need them.
Yep.
And I would say it's either him or Rodney for, like, one-liner guys.
Man. I was listening to Rodney Dangerfield's 1983 album. Don't remember what it's called. There is this 2 minute and 30 second period at the beginning. He does 23 jokes. I timed it. This is from last week. I was listening to this where I'm just like, Rodney Dangerfield, the joke writing is fantastic. My number two is Dimitri Martin.
Hell yeah.
Just a much smarter version of Mitch, but like not as like, I love Mitch more, but like, very smart and short, and like, I'm like, this guy's smart. Like, these are funny and he's intelligent. And I,
Person, dude.
Yeah.
Person was amazing. Have you seen his show, Important Things with Dimitri Martin?
I have.
And H. John Benjamin was on it like a bunch.
Yeah. It's actually, it's.
I love that show.
Dimitri Martin, underrated in a way, you know?
Very.
He gets lost. And then a lot of your people, Dave Chappelle, Bill Burr. Patrice O'Neill. O'Neill, I was big, huge fan of when I was a kid growing up in Houston. He just felt like every kid in Houston. It just felt like every kid that would make fun of you in Houston felt like Patrice O'Neill. And I don't know which one in what order, but like those are those
three. You don't even need to do an order, really.
If you haven't heard of Patrice O'Neill too much, there's this set he does in Montreal. And it's for Just for Laughs, I believe. So Patrice O'Neill, Montreal, Just for Laughs. He talks about, like, what do you call different sexual moves? And the audience is not with him, but they're coming along, and it keeps building up. It's highly offensive, but funnier than it is offensive.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I also like, it's not on my top five. I like this, other new people, I do like Ralph Barbosa. He's a fun kid.
Okay.
He's from Texas.
I just discovered Shane Gillis. Recently,
dude, Shane is,
and
it's pretty funny. His YouTube special is excellent, and his Netflix special.
I think his YouTube one is better.
Yeah, well, that's his first special.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you don't do a special until you're like 33, 34. But oh my god, some of those bits are so funny. Like everything from, like, you know, how did they pick the age of consent to so many great jokes. Shane Gillis, guys. I'm glad something like people like that are out there freaking slinging jokes. So.
Yeah, man.
I will say this, though. Last year, I got to go to 27 comedy shows of people. Like, it's the most I ever did. And I saw Andrew Schultz headline twice. And, like, live, that guy is as good as... I've never laughed harder. I've never seen an audience laugh hard. Very. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of the podcast. It's okay. Whatever. I listen to it once a month, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But live, that guy carries a very good show. And I saw them all last year. I saw Dave, I saw Bill, I saw whatever, like Ronnie Chang, everybody.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah, I was very impressed.
Did you went show. To Dave Chappelle on like New Year's, the first? Yeah.
I also went to his documentary thingy.
Oh yeah, I saw it. I didn't go to that. That was cool?
It was cool. It was like, you know, it was mainly the documentary. He was up there for like 15 minutes of stand-up-ish, but it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I now look at people's specials, but I also see, like, how are you live? Like, I saw Theo Von live.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like his special on Netflix. I saw Theo Von live. I'm like, this guy's hilarious. Like, we had a great time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when did you go see
Theo Von? Just recently, three months ago.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, at the Meridian.
Yeah, I think I saw him at the same place, but it wasn't then. It was, like, maybe, like, 2 years before.
How was he then?
And, like... I thought he was great. My lady is, like, on the fence with him because she, like, she doesn't understand, like, she, because he speaks weird.
Yeah.
Like, he speaks different than, you know, a lot of people and says things with, like, accents. And so something she just doesn't understand. But he came out afterwards and was, like, not happy with this set. And I was, me and my lady are, like, kind of at, I don't know, we're away from, like, where the main entrance is, and we're, like, waiting for our Uber and whatever, and he just came out, and he was, like, chatting. And he was like, oh, man, like, I don't know if really? That... Like, dude, everyone had a great time, you know, and he was just kind of...
Oh, man.
Yeah, he said, don't suck for nothing, because I was, like, telling him, like, you know, yeah. I'm just starting out, yeah. and, like, you know, it happens, but, like, dude, you can't deny that you just made thousands of people,
yeah.
you know, laugh for an hour and a half, like...
Same place I saw, we went to see Anthony Bourdain, and then he came out, and he was just going to his cabin. Wife's like, can we take a picture? I'm like, he looks tired, don't do it, you know, like, don't bother him. And he was like, I'd love to take a picture with you guys, and took a picture, and he had all these jiu-jitsu stickers on his luggage and stuff, and yeah, loved Anthony Bourdain. I know it's unrelated, but...
No, it's like, a cool dude.
It's a cool dude. I don't get bummed when celebrities pass away, generally. But, like, Anthony Bourdain.
That one did it.
Yeah, Steve Irvin. All right. Crocodile Hunter got me.
Chester Bennington, I think, was the worst one for me. My dog's name is Chester.
Oh, man. Yeah. Chris Cornell was a tough one for me, too. Yeah, Chris Cornell was... yeah. I love those guys.
All right. Do you want to do... let's do superheroes.
Superheroes.
Yeah. I can go first.
Yeah, please
I
do.
I literally do this one every episode because it's my way to bring people into my world. So, sure. Batman.
Okay.
Ninja Turtles as a group.
All right,
it's kind of a cop out. It's kind of a cop out. And then Red Hood.
Okay.
Arsenal and Spider-Man.
I'm glad I watched a lot of like Justice League and all that stuff because I'm like, I know some of these people. Arsenal, I know from Young Justice and stuff.
Yeah. Young Justice is good, yeah.
No, those are all great. You can't go. What was your first one?
Batman.
That's
my guy.
All right. I was going to go with Batman. I'm going to go with Martian Manhunter, and then I'll go with... So that's I like Martian one. Manhunter for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons is that he's a shapeshifter, and he shifts into still an alien. I was like, why don't you just become a human superhero and be more liked? He's like, no. But he can read your mind, he can transform into anything, he can fly, he has super strength. That's a lot of...
Yeah, man.
And then opposite Batman, who has like, I have a lot of money, and I know... Kung Fu or whatever. Like, I don't really emphasize what he knows. Spider-Man. I just grew up with Spider-Man.
Me too, man.
And he's a scientist. That's really, like... And he's a kid. And his grand... You know, his uncle passed away. Or aunt, depending on what multiverse you're in. And you gotta love that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I really like Green Arrow. Ever since a kid, I had a bow and arrow. And I felt like, look at this dude. He's doing something with just a bow and arrow. He doesn't even know Kung Fu like Batman. And then Flash, just because of his sense of humor. Green Lantern and Flash are always close for me, but I like Flash because...
All right.
I grew up watching... In Pakistan, we would get the Flash TV show in no particular order.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like season 1, episode 1, and then season 3, episode 2. I don't know why they did that in Pakistan. We get Star Trek.
Yeah.
The Next Generation and Flash... In random order.
Oh, that
sucked. Yeah, it sucked. And they ruined Ninja Turtles because they dubbed it. As soon as it got to Pakistan, it was all in Urdu, and they made it all, like, gimmicky, while,
Like the live-action movies?
No, bro, the cartoons. They dubbed over the cartoon voices. So Donatello was like, Shredder! And it was like, ass. Just had an accent the whole time.
Okay.
Weird.
Got you.
Good choices, though. I can't,
Yeah, you can get some choices.
Did you enjoy the Ninja Turtle movies?
I like obviously the 90s ones. I think they hold up remarkably well.
Okay.
I wasn't a huge fan of the third one. I do have it. And then the remakes, I've always been kind of a fan of like anything. I like the animated TMNT that they did like maybe like 10, 15 years ago when they redid the live action ones. I liked the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought the second one was extremely bad. Like, Casey Jones would never be a cop.
I love how upset you are about that.
You guys ruined it. Like, yeah. Casey Jones is the... They put all these cool characters in, but then they just didn't do them justice.
He was the most anti-authority...
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I agree. But yeah. I haven't seen the newest one, Mutant Mayhem.
Yeah, no, me neither. I think Seth Rogen is involved, but
I've heard good things, and I definitely want to check it out. The thing is, most times when I have the opportunity to watch stuff, I'm with my lady, and like we have like we're generally like, we got to agree.
Kind of thing, I understand, completely. I'll find like a middle ground of like, can we, you know, we'll watch like, we just saw Blue Eyed Samurai, which is an anime, and it's beautiful. So it's like anime about like sword fighting, but it's beautiful. Or she's like, oh, look how beautiful. I'm like, all right, perfect.
We just watched Saltburn.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
I've only seen a couple of, I've only seen parts of that.
It's right creepy, man. Really? It wasn't, yeah. And we started watching it 20 minutes in. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this, man. And then it got like, it was very shades of Parasite almost. Ooh. Like the vibe of just like creepiness. Mm. Maybe even a little creepier. I say Parasite was a better overall movie, but yeah. Jeez, Saltburn. Okay. Definitely weird. All right, what are we doing now? You want to do Rage Against the Machine songs?
Why not?
Or so do you want to, okay, so can I can do this.
Yeah.
And you can do, I mean, you know, whatever. Okay. Sleep Now in the Fire.
Great song.
Battle of Los Angeles.
It's an amazing album. It's
just a fantastic album. Yeah. Every single song.
Every single song. And you're not exaggerating.
Every
single song.
And I remember discovering Rage Against the Machine when Woodstock 99 happened.
Whoa.
And they played that. They played and they had like a 3-day pay-per-view event, mm-hmm. That I was able to like catch, and like I didn't know who Rage Against the Machine was going into there, but like after that weekend, it mm-hmm. was like a life-changing thing. I was like, this is like amazing. I didn't even know there was like music that was so heavily like that.
Yeah.
Until then, Take the Power Back.
Amazing song. Yep.
Guerrilla Radio.
Guerrilla Radio, fantastic track.
Born of a Broken Man.
That's
one of my favorites off of Battle of Los
Angeles. I got goosebumps when you said that. It's like immediately Born of a Broken
Man. Yeah, yeah. Never a broken man. And then Bulls on Parade.
Yeah, man. I see a band I love so much. And like you could have almost said any song.
Yeah.
But I love Ashes in the Fall. I love Testify. I love Calm Like a Bomb.
Yeah.
Bomb track. I got to see Prophets of Rage. Do you know what that is?
Oh, yeah, of course. I love Cypress Hill.
So me and my brother got there early. We got right to the front. We're holding onto the railing and, like, great concert. They bought Dave Grohl at the end to, like, play a song with him. And, yeah, I can't, like, it was such a fantastic event. So, yeah, Rage Against the Machine, probably them, Tool, System of a Down. Those are probably my three-headed favorite bands.
I dig it.
What are your three favorite bands, if you don't mind me asking?
Three, okay. My favorite band is probably either Head PE or Linkin Park.
Okay.
I'm very big on nu metal. Let's see. Favorite bands of all time is interesting. Who have I seen the most? I don't know. Head PE, Linkin Park. I like all the bands you were saying. I just feel like I'm not considering.
There's so much music.
I was super, like, I don't listen to them much now, but I was really, really huge on Green Day back in the day. Yeah. I like a lot of heavy metal. I really like Stained.
Stained. Had some amazing songs. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
All of those bands have like really underrated guitarists. Even like a Limp Bizkit had like Wes Borland.
I love Limp Bizkit too.
Yeah,
Limp Bizkit's on there.
Yeah, it was one of my first albums. That and Offspring.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan. I'm going to see them actually.
Limp Bizkit still biscuits?
Like they're coming.
Really?
Yeah, wow. But dude, the tour is weird.
What do you mean?
I don't. So it's like it's called the Loserville Tour.
I believe it.
And like the last time I saw them was like, 10-15 years ago in Quebec.
Mm-hmm.
And they just haven't been to Canada in, like, a very long time. And they're touring with, okay, most notably, I just want to say, Corey Feldman.
Whoa.
Because he's really out there.
I thought you were going to say Korn, and you just kept going with the rest of the...
No, I've Corey seen, actually, Feldman. Limp Bizkit and Korn together, though. Like, way, way back. And that was cool, man. That would've been. And that was cool because and I was a Korn fan, but I remember, like, Korn was headlining, and after Limp Bizkit, I saw all these, like, goth kids. Mm-hmm. Like, as I said, nu metal guy. Like, I love hip-hop. I love metal. I think they're so great together. And after Limp Bizkit got off, me and my buddy are kind of, like, going to get a drink or whatever. And all these goth kids are, like, just exhausted, sweating. Like, just some of their, like, clothing is ripped. And they're just like, wow, that was amazing. And, like, they were all, like, expressing how they didn't know Limp Bizkit would be that good. And, like, I mean, really just one of the best bands to see. I don't know how much... Man, tickets are wild for concerts now.
Tickets don't make any
sense. We got them on pre-sale, and, like, my buddy, like... Yeah, he got them for, like, really cheap, but...
It's crazy.
It is crazy how it is now.
Yeah.
And, like, I saw Mudvayne, Deftones, Limp Bizkit, Metallica, and Linkin Park together... $115 at Skydome.
Jeez.
Yeah, dude.
There's nothing like that
anymore. No, man. Me and my lady paid $150 a piece to see Chili Peppers at Skydome or whatever it's called now, Rogers Center.
Deftones was one of my favorite bands as well.
Yeah.
They had
they're solid, man.
What was Around the Fur, Digital Bath?
Digital Bath.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Around the Fur. Digital Bath actually, I think, was on White Pony.
White Pony was the album.
Yes.
That was amazing. Amazing stuff.
All right. So let's end with rewatchable movies.
Oof.
I really, like, I kind of saw what you were saying. Like, you said one movie was the most you've seen. And, mm-hmm. like, I've done Edward Norton movies before. And I just thought this was, like, the next logical thing. Because, I mean, Fight Club, is that your number one?
Fight Club's my number one
movie. Yeah.
I think Fight Club informs big chunks of who I am as a person.
Yeah.
As much as any book or individual who has an effect on me. I think Fight Club is... It's a part of my DNA.
Yeah.
It's
a great movie.
What would you say? Or should I go with all of mine
real quick? You can do yours. You can do yours.
Sure. I love The Matrix.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also came out at a very specific time in my... Like, I'm in high school. You watch the shit out of this movie. As you grow older, it makes more and more and more sense. To the point where you're like, are we in a simulation? Is it a bad simulation?
A thing with the Matrix, too, I just want to say, because I love that movie, and it's, like, one of those movies where, like, when I watch, I love movies like this, where I watch, like, the first one, and I'm like, I gotta watch the other two.
Mm.
Like, I gotta. Like, yeah. I can't just watch the first one and not, I have to at some point. Like, I can't fill it with another movie in between.
Yeah.
You know, it's gotta be those in a row.
Yeah. I love Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, I saw it yesterday, is how much I love
it.
I like all the Tarantino movies, but, like, Pulp Fiction is it's a fantastic movie, and it's done artistically and beautifully, and there's a lot of blood.
Mm-hmm.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is a movie I've seen 50, 60 times.
All right.
Guy Ritchie has a very nice style, but that movie, those actors, even the color tones they pick for the whole movie... I love Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. If you haven't seen it,
it's fantastic. Oh no, I've seen it.
Nice. I could judge by your eyes you'd seen it. And then Harry Potter. I know it's soft, but it's, out of all the things that are series, I love.
Yeah.
I just love. Those are my friends. Like, it just felt like I know. Like, it just, yeah. I'd love to live in.
You that. You have a favorite Harry Potter movie?
I think The Prisoner of Azkaban is a really good one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's when things start getting serious. Where you're like, what happened to your dad? You know, what happened to your mom? Like, you got, the first three are fun, and that's when it starts getting serious.
Yeah. I hear you.
Love to hear yours, sir.
My favorite Harry Potter one?
Well, why don't you can...
I'll say Goblet of Fire.
Probably. That's a good one. That's a good one.
But, like, they're all good. And John Williams, he did, like, the scores for the first three, so they... I don't know.
They sound different.
I like the younger Harry Potter versus, like, the old... And you didn't need to kill Dobby off. I'll be mad forever about that.
I was listening to the audiobook before the movies came out. I was a death claims adjuster, so when somebody would die, I would calculate how much money goes to them and stuff, their family. And I remember I'm like doing a death claim and listening to this, and Dobby died. I realize I'm crying. I'm crying about a fake elf rather than the death claim I'm working on. So
yeah, that's wild. Yeah.
Wild.
Okay, so rewatchable for me.
Yep.
Home Alone.
Yes.
One and two. I gotta call. Yeah. I'm full of cop outs. But if it wasn't, Home Alone 2 would just be number two. So, one and two. And then number two for me is Black Sheep. With, freaking David Spade and Chris Farley. Yeah,
Chris Farley back in the day. I remember this.
What was the first one they did?
Tommy Boy?
Yeah, I think most people consider that the better one. For some reason, I like Black Sheep more.
Those people are idiots.
And then I'm going Bushwhacked, which is a lot of my movies. Like, my list is based like in nostalgia. Like they're right. all movies that I watched when I was a kid, and like I still watch, and they still make me feel great when I watch it. Like I could watch, like Bushwhacked. That's my number three. It has Marv from Home Alone. Mm-hmm. He's like the main dude in it. Daniel Stern. I'm a big fan. Like every one of his movies, not just Home Alone. I love. And also Joe Pesci is pretty good too.
Joe Pesci.
But like I could watch it. Like, over and over. My lady knows I've seen this movie, like, dozens and dozens of times, and I still laugh at it. And she doesn't get it. And I was like, I don't know, you know? I don't know. Some things I'll watch, like, I'll watch stand-up specials, and they're funny, and I don't laugh out loud. But then I watch just something stupid, you know, some kid throwing a ball at a dude's nuts, like, from a movie. No, you know? Fair. I don't know, man.
As a comic, when I watch comics, I'm almost studying.
Right?
Yeah. When I watch, like, a fail video, I laugh. Look at that cat, you know?
That's a good point, dude.
I went to the Comedy Cellar with a bunch of, like, one of my good friends. He's like, you didn't laugh. I was like, well, I had a great time. I was just walking, you know? But if I sit in the front, I feel obligated because I'm like, they can see me, I can see them. I want to make sure, like, I'm doing my part.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm in the back, I'm like, man, I'm just in awe of, you know, how good somebody is, so... Probably not the best way to be an audience member. Laugh if you're ever...
No, but, like, it's just something that happens when you're into an art form. I do the same thing with comedy. Mm-hmm. And now, when I watch wrestling, I got into it, like, 2 years ago. I'm already... Like, I watch refs. I mean, refs aren't a part of the story. Like, so I went to a seminar, and one of the guys was like, all right, like, if this is, like, a dance, if a wrestling match is a dance between two people, like, what exactly... is the referee. And like the guy said choreographer.
Ooh.
And so like a lot of things that like refs do in wrestling, like I as a fan for fucking like 30 years like didn't even know they did like time cues and like just certain things. So I'm always watching them when they're getting close and seeing what they're seeing, if they're whispering or how they try to hide what they're whispering or do you know what I mean?
Kinda.
And so like I'm definitely taking notes just like that. And I think it goes with anything, no matter what you do. If you're a guitar player and you go watch someone play guitar, you know, it's just...
I'm a drums guy.
Like, oh, you're a drummer.
Oh, I took drumming class. I'm just not any good whatsoever. But like if a band doesn't have a good drummer, I'm not listening.
Fair.
Yeah, like, I don't care about the rest of it if you don't have a good drummer, so...
That's fair.
That's, like, all the bands I like Tool, Rage, like, I'm very big on the drummer.
Yeah.
That's what this one thing about that whole genre is, like, rock bands, metal bands, they're not gonna have a shit drummer, you know? It's a very important position.
It's hard. And then you have, like, bands that don't sound like, they... Well, I don't want to say they don't sound like they should have good drummers, but, like... They could use with like a more like Blink 182. Mm-hmm. Like Travis is just so miles ahead of like the other guys in the band.
Yep. 100%. You know? Yep.
And I wonder what he'd be like. I've heard him do like more poppy stuff. I'd like to hear him do some like heavier stuff.
I agree.
I think he could do it.
I wonder how he'd be in like in another band. Yeah. But you know, good for him. He made a bazillion dollars with Blink 182 and their 2 minute long songs.
Yeah. Cool Runnings is my number four, dude.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love it. I should have had something funny. Damn it. Cool Runnings.
And then...
Feel the Rhythm.
Happy Gilmore is my number five.
Happy Gilmore.
I remember when I first... actually, no, it kind of connects. So, that whole incident that I was explaining, what happened with my mother, and I smashed her boyfriend's windshield with a baseball bat, whatever. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting arrested for that. And I was in jail for a little bit, and then I went to court, and they were like, they understood my history. They were like, okay, so do you want to be released today and go live with your mom, or like, do you want to stay in jail, and then it's going to take some time, but we'll put you in another foster home. Right, because they knew like my whole history,
right?
And I was like, I'll stay in jail, dude. And I stayed for like another month and a half, and then they found me a foster home in Brampton. And when I first moved to Brampton, didn't know a lot of people, I went to the library and I rented Happy Gilmore. I watched it every single day, sometimes twice a day, dude.
Yeah.
And like that got me through like that particular hard moment of my life. Just the one movie.
Yeah. Some of these movies were exactly that.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't have therapy growing up where, you know, when you were kids, it's just like, this movie is my therapy. And these are my friends. And like, it kind of feels that way at times. Like I would, you know, and that, those are the voices in your head rather than, I mean, my parents worked a lot, you know, and like people just kept getting beat up where I grew up, and like these movies, these songs, they were, that's your whole thought is these things. It's mm-hmm. very interesting. I'm so lucky to have like entertainment that is so readily available, and that's what I love about comedy. It's like, you know, people come to your show, they've had one type of day, like whatever their life, and then they sit down and they hear some just your stupid joke that you've been crafting, and they're like, it changes their, they're laughing, they're touching their friends, and yeah. that's what I love about stand-up comedy.
Is that. Yeah, man. And that's also like why I try personally not to be too serious. Like, I don't talk a lot of political stuff. I currently do have a bit about Stephen Hawking, just because sure. I feel like I'm coming at it from a really fucking cool angle.
Okay.
And, like, it made my lady laugh. Like, if it makes my lady laugh, I gotta write it down. Nice. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but usually I'm like, I want people to come and, like, have an escape from all the noise and nonsense outside yeah. of those walls. So I try not to be political. Even though, like, Chappelle, Rogan, some of my dudes are mm-hmm. very political, you know? Right.
No, I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
Oh, man, all right. You wanna do one of these?
Yeah, let's top it off. The topics.
All right, this one seems like it's a lot of words. You can grab one too, dude.
All right, cool.
Oh, interesting. Okay, this is... You want to go first?
What job have you had that other people might not know about?
Ooh, it's hard because I've talked about a lot of stuff on here.
I don't know any of your jobs.
Any of my jobs? Oh, forklift. That's definitely something I did for a while. But I'm trying to think. I did the door-to-door stuff.
Yep.
I'm a chef. I've been doing that for a while now. Nice. What have I done that nobody... Okay, this is not really a job, but I moved out on my own from my last foster home when mm-hmm. I was just under 17. So I was like 16. My birthday is in January.
Okay.
And it was the September just before we start school, right? So there's like 4 months. So I was like, what, like 4 months away from being 17?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, hold on. What was the question exactly?
What job have you had that others might not know
right,
about?
Right, right. Okay, so... Oh, fuck. I don't want to... Ah, well. I used to just scam. I used to just do some scams. I had a couple scams that I did. I went door-to-door for Mount Sinai before, and I lied about some crap.
Get some loose change.
Yeah. I used to... Like, I would go to, like, fancy grocery stores, and I would find, like, a big... like bill, and I would just go in and grab like the couple most expensive things on mm-hmm. the thing, and then I would literally walk in with nothing. Mm-hmm. I'd go grab it from the aisle, bring it to the cashier,
right,
and then return it.
Oh my
Do
god!
You know what I mean,
dude? That was very common where I used to live. In
yeah,
Houston
so
as well.
I things like things of that nature. Do you know what I mean?
I gotcha.
But
those aren't jobs, Pop.
No, they're not jobs, but they gave me money because I didn't have a job.
That is a street hustler. That's like, you want to hear about my jobs?
I used to stick up people. So crack, bro?
Dude,
no.
I love it. Thank you. That's a good answer. I like it. Right. I definitely learned something about you, so.
All right.
What do you got?
You can answer that, too. If you have any weird jobs.
Yeah. Nothing too weird. Just working at flea markets, dude. Just selling perfumes in Spanish. You know, voy al baño, just talking a lot in Spanish, and people think you're Mexican, because you start talking in Spanish, and then they start talking in Spanish, and you're like, I'm sorry, I only know how to begin these sentences. So yeah, that's
all right.
Spanish retail.
You receive $1 million to donate to charity.
Okay.
What causes will you support?
I would say orphanages, number one. In my religion, our prophet, Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, was an orphan. So it actually has a very big, like, we want to support as many orphans as possible. It's a very important thing to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I would literally go ahead and find which countries are the poorest, and then you start there. So it'll probably be like Sudan, South Sudan, Gaza. I actually was looking up the list of the countries that have like the most need for orphan related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, I think that would be where the $1 million goes.
Okay.
Way to bring it down, Paul.
Yo, man, I...
You could have asked me for, like, something else, but...
Donate to charity. I'm doing a 50-50 split for Gaza and homeless Canadians. Yeah. Some sort of, yeah, something that...
Yeah, I've had so many friends that have been homeless, Houston and here. Actually, some of my comedian friends, where I'm like, hey, you need a ride? And I'm like, no, I'm here.
And there was a point where, like, Toronto seemed like... And don't get me wrong, dude, I've been homeless a couple times. I know Toronto's bad, but, like, it's getting real bad in other places now, too. Yeah. It's not, like, it's... Something's... Dude, yeah.
Something's gotta give.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. All right, let's get those $1 million, though, so we can help some things out.
There. Right? Do you play lottery?
No, man. Not since I had a kid. Since before that, you'd have to, like, you know, you have some fun with some friends, but, like, not at all anymore.
Do you want to do your other one?
Yeah, I didn't realize we're going to do both. Great. What were the most useful things you learned in school?
Realistically, just, learning how to be comfortable with who I am.
Okay.
It's not a subject, but, like, that's what a lot of school taught me. I got picked on a lot.
Yeah.
And, like, it got to a point where, like, I just fucking stood up for myself. In times when it was probably not a good idea, but, like, it kind of... Like, I just don't like shitty people having control over me. So if, like, some jack dude is, like, doing some shit, like, throwing paper at the back of my head, like,
I know
exactly I would get up and I would... fight him in the middle of class.
Yeah.
And, like, I literally just felt like in some situations, like, I had to. Yeah. Do you know?
No,
and,
exactly. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I it didn't deter me from, like, I don't know, just cutting my hair a certain way or dyeing my hair or wearing anything that I wanted to wear, you know? And I feel like some people I know, like, in their 30s, still haven't reached that point. And it's, you know...
So interesting. I would say the same thing for me was just how to stand up for myself. I had this weird anxiety from getting beat up a lot in school. It's just like in Houston, everybody, you don't feel singled out because everybody is getting, like, 20% of people just getting their ass kicked pretty regularly.
Mm.
And it wasn't until I started doing jiu-jitsu very regularly that I realized, I'm like, oh, I have a specific type of anxiety that is now beginning to go away once I realize how to move around and handle myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize. I was like, oh, I was like... You just think since everybody's getting their ass kicked, this is just how, you know, it's fine. But you realize, oh, I have anxiety when I'm around large groups or people that feel a certain way or they're angry and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that didn't dissipate until literally I did jiu-jitsu for about 4 or 5 years. And then I felt like a normal person again. So, yeah, very interesting. I'm sure that wasn't the answer this card expected either one of us to say.
But, like, really, I mean, a lot of the stuff, like, I mean... Yeah. A lot of stuff I learned in school, I didn't really... Until I got to, like, college.
Yeah.
Then I actually learned a lot of the stuff. Like, the formative stuff, the foundation, you know, the basics. But then all that... There's so much nonsense holding I learned.
You until college, it's just... You're just being held until society can move you along to the next level. It's not really...
You learn better when you're learning about things that you're interested in 100%. As well.
Awesome, man.
What was a favorite activity of yours while growing up, and how did it shape you? This is very...
What was a favorite activity of mine while growing up, and how did it form me? I would say one of my favorite activities was playing tennis in the Texas heat. And I wasn't an amazing tennis player, but I played varsity tennis all through high school. And what it taught me was I could beat people as they dehydrate. So I would do this persistence hunting way of tennis where I'm like, I'm fast and it's hot and I will just stay on this court longer than you until you cramp. And then I took that to jiu-jitsu and I took that to stand-up where it's like, I'm going to just hustle this game until it leans my way.
All right. I dig that.
Yeah. Tennis smart. Taught me that.
Yeah, dude. Okay. I don't know. I it's weird because this is exactly... I'm just going to say it. So I would say being a class clown.
Mm.
And it's interesting because, like, I don't know. I was a troubled youth, man. I had a lot of problems and, like, just didn't I moved around from foster homes like sometimes every couple months, and I was living with a different person every year and at a different location every 2 years, and it was like, I don't know. So I had a lot of like issues while I was growing up, and I didn't like to be the center of attention, but I like to make people laugh. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of is what led me to stand-up comedy. And just at the end of the year, I was chatting with a buddy from middle school. Yeah, he actually just like we've talked, we have each other on social media and stuff, but he just like messaged me out of nowhere just at the end of the year and was like, hey man, like, you know, I noticed you're doing comedy, you have a family now, I'm super happy for you. And I just want you to know, like, I have a yearbook where like you stated like you wanted to be a comedian and now you're a comedian. And I was like, that's crazy stuff. You know, like it was really, I don't remember it, but I could see me saying that, you know, like, and he's like, I just got to find it and send a photo. But like, I know, you know, and he has a family and stuff too. So there's like no pressure. I might get it in like 2 months, but I thought that was really cool.
That is cool. I mean, the younger version of you would be so proud.
Right.
That's awesome.
Hell yeah, dude.
Awesome, bro.
Okay, so before we wrap things up and let these people know where to get at you, I just want to know what the future holds for you, man. What are your plans for comedy? Do you have an album already or anything people could check out?
I don't actually. Asian Comedy All Stars will be releasing a headlining show I did for them this year, so that'll be cool. It'll be on Spotify and all that stuff. I just started teaching seniors stand up comedy and public speaking. Honestly, with the war, I didn't expect to kind of go there, but just with like everything happening in the world, like comedy is making a little bit less sense than it ever did, and I need to just lean into it differently. Like, I love that I'm teaching seniors. I want to go and just release all my stuff, you know, slowly, but like I wanted this year, like, release everything, whether it's a short or whatever, Instagram, and just put it out there for my kid to like watch later on. I think I've been like collecting all these jokes for like some purpose where I'm like, what is the purpose? And so let me just put it out there, let people laugh, let them know how good you are, what you do, and enjoy. What about you?
Oh man. Okay. I didn't expect it to be flipped on me. I'm taking some time off in March.
Okay.
All right. I'm taking two months off, to spend, you know, just time with my daughter and my family. And my plan for that, like, obviously I got my shows that I'm producing, doing stand up and whatever, the podcast, reffing, but like my 9 to 5, completely done. And that takes up like a large chunk of my time, you know?
Yeah.
I plan to write a children's book.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. I've already pretty much have it written. I have someone that, well, I have like an illustrator that I've talked with, I've mentioned it to, she's like a friend of mine, and so she's just kind of figuring out exactly how to go about it, and I know a couple people that have put out children's books. I have some people that, one of my buddy's wives, like, she like runs like the Peel, the region, like, library, like, she could, I don't know. I'm putting all the things in places, so when I have my time off, that's going to be my main focus, and I'm hoping to get it out, you know, by, I go back to work in the middle of May.
Yeah.
So, that would be really cool, you know, at some point this year. And it's also, like, I just want to, it's for my daughter, man. It's called Super Lee. And I'm trying to make it, like, a gender neutral. My daughter's name's Aaliyah, but we call her Lee.
Okay.
And I want to kind of just make it, like, a little more gender neutral. Like, you don't know what they are.
Yeah.
You know, but really it's her, but I want her to look like just any kid. So like a boy could pick it up and read it and still relate, and a girl could pick it up. And it's just kind of like about a kid who just super into superheroes, but realizes it doesn't have any powers through like doing certain tests, like, you know, fast speed and invisibility. I have these tests like
lined up. And I'd love to read this to my kid, man.
And then ends up rescuing, like, a cat from, like, a tree and is, like, hailed a, you know, a superhero from, you know,
its neighbors so and beautiful. Stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, awesome.
Yeah, so that's this is like the first time I've publicly spoken about this book.
I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you being here, brother.
Thank you, bro.
You can let these people know where to get at you if you like.
Syed.Raza.Graham on Instagram. Crash and Flow Podcast. It's on YouTube, Spotify, and all that.
Crash and Flow. You didn't even talk about their podcast. How long have you been doing it?
8 years.
8 years.
Every
Shit.
Week.
Shit. Every You do it every week, yeah. And it's just you and your buddy?
It's me and my buddy. It's episode 428.
My God.
So, yeah.
I gotta check it out, bro.
Yeah, it does all right, actually. Like a few thousand listeners.
I honestly didn't even know until today, dude.
We gotta market
them. I'm gonna check that out. I'll tell you. Bro, marketing is a pain in the ass, dude. Oh, my God.
I know.
I'm not great at it either,
but
dude.
Thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure. Guys, like always, this podcast is brought to you by Neon Light District. Hit them up. Use code PILLOWTALK to save 10%. And by The Great North Apparel. Hit them up. Use code PILLOWTALK to save 30%. Go follow Syed. Yep. And I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Thank you for sticking around. Peace the fuck out.